Taking Stock with Pim Fox and Courtney Donahoe.
All right, let's find out a little bit about how to spice up a glass of sparkling celebration during this New Year's Eve weekend. Let's find out from two experts we have with us. Darryl Robinson, he is the host of Drink Up on the Cooking Channel, and also with us Ryan Sutton, Bloomberg dining critic. A good combination here in the studio. Welcome. Darryl, let's start with you. This idea of somehow spicing up a glass of sparkling wine, you do this with champagne? Would you dare change a glass of champagne?
Well, you said two things in that one sentence, sparkling and champagne. So they are two different things. So we are going to spice up sparkling or Prosecco. We're going to leave that champagne alone and, you know, save that for those more delicate, intimate moments, because that's the price here. You know, Prosecco and sparkling are, you know, mixable and actually pretty good on their own. They're just not from the Champagne region, France.
Well, right, you've got to make that point, right, that the Champagne is like a distinct region, and unless it is from grapes grown in the Champagne region of France, you cannot technically
exactly.
call it champagne.
America does not make champagne. We make sparkling.
Although Korbel would like to disagree, because they call it California champagne, which makes it fancy.
I mean, California sparkling.
I, for one, am on a champagne campaign, because it wouldn't be the same without that champagne in my brain. If I didn't drink it, I would go insane.
He rhymes. So what would you use for this? Would you use the Proseccos and the Cavas as opposed to champagnes?
I'm going to use the Proseccos and the sparklings and the Cavas because the bubbles are bigger. So they're going to round out in your mouth a little bit better and grab onto those flavors. Champagnes have smaller bubbles, which are more delicate, which is why they're aged in their bottles. And sparkling and Proseccos are cheaper because, you know what, they basically come from the vines. You macerate them. You ferment them in stainless steel vats, and then they're ready to go. Champagne takes a while. The longer champagne sits, the better it gets. So let's leave that $200 bottle on the shelf and let's step down to something more affordable, like a $14, $15 bottle of, today I'm using Fantanelle Prosecco. Really nice, sits well on its own. It has these really, really, really cool golden apple notes. And in the first cocktail, what we did is we mixed a little bit of that Fantanelle Prosecco and some Domaine. Domaine is a ginger liqueur, a nice fresh baby ginger liqueur. And at the bottom of this, I dropped a nice edible wild hibiscus flower. So after you get done drinking, you get a treat at the bottom.
Wow. I'm looking at it right now. This is a beautiful color, Pim.
Indeed it is. I'm just curious, when you add something else to a Prosecco, does it take on the taste of what you add, or does it retain any of the taste of the Prosecco?
It's very mixable. It's very friendly, and that's why I like it. It's adaptable. Proseccos are generally brutes like this one, so, you know, they lend themselves to marrying other flavors with them. So herbs, liqueurs, all those kind of things just wrap around that Prosecco.
Let me interrupt you for a second, Darryl, because I know that I'm a huge fan of bubbles. I'm a huge fan of champagne and sparkling wine. Now, when you mix something with champagne, you always have the threat of losing those delicate little gorgeous bubbles. How do you make sure your champagne or sparkling wine cocktail keeps those lovely little balls?
Well, once again, we're not using champagne because you're right. Those delicate little bubbles should stand on their delicate little selves. So we're going to mix those delicate bigger bubbles in Prosecco, and we're going to use flutes because flutes are designed that way so less air gets into them. So that's why you have these long, elegant type glasses so that the air doesn't oxidize the Prosecco, sparkling, and flatten it. So it will stay bubbly.
Understood. And presumably we're gonna stir these drinks as opposed to shaking them.
We're not going to do any of that.
Is that right?
This is simple. There's no shaking, no macerating, no blending. This is from bottle to glass. And if you want to make sure everything is cold, just refrigerate everything beforehand. Why adulterate this with ice or shaking and all those kind of crazy things that mixologists love to do? I mean, there's a time and place for that, but not with this.
How did you decide to use this wild hibiscus, these flowers?
I'm a wild kind of guy, and I'm always looking for something wild and interesting to float my boat. And, you know, I mean, it's available. It's on the market. It's easy. It's tasty. It's a little bit different. And we're talking
about...
Where
do you get it?
You know, I mail ordered this one, but you can actually get them in stores. And where you can't find the syrup, the other thing is most tea companies make a hibiscus tea. Why not just make your own tea at home, add a little agave nectar or maple syrup to it, sweeten it up, and you get basically the same effect.
Darryl, I'm just curious about the sales of Prosecco. I mean, what have you seen in terms of trends? Is there more money going into Prosecco?
It's now opening up into the American market. It was a very quiet thing because we just basically were drinking champagnes and very, very cheap other things. Prosecco cases have grown, I think, in the United States. They're now moving 2 to 3 million cases per year. So it's pretty heavy. And it's now the new buzzword in most bars. I hang out at a lot of lounges in the city, both East and West Coast, and people are now asking for Prosecco because, you know, when the bartender comes back with the tab, it's not a $30 glass, it's a $9, $10 glass.
How much is that cutting into champagne sales, for example?
Champagne is not suffering. Let me tell you, people who love champagne will always love champagne. Remember we talked about those delicious, delicate little bubbles? Well, that's a different taste, and that's a different type of event and occasion.
And I'm one of those people who's willing to pay the markup for champagne, and it really is.
He's fancy.
I'm a fancy guy. You know, I'm not a. I don't have my blue collar on today, but that's hiding my white collar. And it's funny, something I've been doing in my restaurant reviews. I of course review restaurants for Bloomberg, and I'm trying to develop this sort of index, and I call it the champagne index. And it's what the lowest price of a bottle of champagne costs at any particular restaurant. And I've been finding that number is slowly growing over the course of the years. A lot of restaurants I've been eating at lately, like, say, The Lion or John DeLucy's Crown, or even low-price restaurants like Red Farm, have been having the minimum bottle of champagne cost $85 to $100. Red Farm, it's run by a guy called Joe Anning and Ed Schoenfeld, really casual restaurant. It's a place where you get, you know, $10 small plates, but yet their cheapest bottle of champagne is $100. It's a Laurent Perrier. It's a lovely bottle of champagne, but, you know, that's the price of champagne, and these are the luxury markups that champagne is commanding.
Ryan Sutton, you mentioned the word markup, and I want to understand a little bit more about New Year's Eve celebrations and the markups that restaurants are able to charge for specific holidays. What have you found when you look at the restaurants that you frequent in terms of their increasing their tab?
Oh, they're increasing their tab a lot, but I want to caveat that point. It's not a something for nothing markup. You're not just paying more because it's New Year's Eve. Yeah, it's part of that. You know, part of the process is restaurants realize you don't want to be alone with you and your girlfriend or boyfriend just staying at home. They know you want to have a party. They know you want to be part of a larger party. And that's why they can charge you a little bit more. But again, it's not something for nothing. It's also the fact that they realize it's the end of bonus season. They realize people want luxury. And so instead of just being Valentine's Day where they increase the prices for no reason, on New Year's Eve, they add caviar, they add truffles, they add foie gras. You know, take 11 Madison Park, for example, one of my favorite restaurants. Typically, you walk into 11 Madison Park, you pay $125 per person. So you go with your girlfriend, multiply that by two, that's $250. After tax and tip, that's normally going to be $322 before beverage. But now you go on New Year's Eve, the minimum price for the second seating when you ring the bell at New Year is going to be $575 per person. So multiply that by two, plus tax, plus tip, and you're going to be spending at least $1,482 for you and your girlfriend to have dinner at 11 Madison Park. Now, the flip side of the coin is you get one course of caviar, two courses of truffles, one course of white truffles, which are even more expensive than black truffles. And so you're going to have a really great time with live music and a live band, and you're going to have a whole big thing about it. You just have to realize exactly how much more money you're going to spend, and that's what I call the real cost.